Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Hypothalamic Amenorrhea Podcast. I'm Dani Sheriff, your host, certified fertility awareness practitioner, functional nutrition counselor, and founder of the HA Society, and of course, an HA recovery coach who has walked where you currently are walking. This is the place to come if you care about getting your period regularly. This podcast aims to educate, inform, and keep you motivated on your period and HA recovery track. So let's dive in. But last thing, nothing on the show should be taken as medical advice, so please seek the advice of your physician. So over a year ago, I created something called the 7-Day HA Recovery Commitment Challenge, and I've been running it for over a year. It was this free email-based challenge, so lots of reading, but you would get an email every day for 7 days to help you overcome and tackle the different but important areas that you need to be checking off in order to get your period back. Now, over time, I have collected some really great feedback, and upon working with all of these wonderful, amazing women, really started to learn even more about what works and what doesn't. And so I'm excited to be introducing to you guys the updated version. It's called the 7-Day HA Recovery Kickoff, and it is totally designed to help you not just commit to the process and have all of your ducks in a row in terms of important factors that need to be tackled and issues that need to be overcome in order to get your period. But the whole thing is now based in video. So you can listen/watch, and every day for 7 days, we will tackle nutrition. There's actually 2 days of that because it's so big. We'll tackle lifestyle, we'll tackle exercise, your support network, your mindset game. Each video goes from anywhere between 12 minutes and 5 minutes, so it's not very long, but you'll get all of the most important areas and the best tips and strategies for how to implement them. Because I know that going through recovery is hard. There's always an area for each person that is a little bit difficult to execute on. And so the goal, or maybe a lot difficult. So the goal of this challenge is to help you have the awareness, the self-awareness, and the tools and strategies you need to overcome each of the different issues that AHA recovery faces for us. So get on it. It's great if you're at the very beginning of recovery or if you're halfway through. I mean, we never know how far through we are until it's over, do we? But no matter where you're at, it can be a really good opportunity to check in and look for blind spots and areas where you might be dropping the ball in your nutrition, in your lifestyle, in, you know, maybe it's your support network that's a problem. Maybe exercise is something that you are still struggling with making changes to. So check it out. Go to thehasociety.com/7-day-challenge, or the link will be on the website. So it may be in the show notes of this show. It may not be. Just go to thehasociety.com and you'll find it in the footer, or you'll find it in the pop-up that happens when you visit the page. And we will see you for day one of the challenge.
Okay, everybody, welcome back to the Hypothalamic Amenorrhea Podcast. It's Ashley, the other half, and today we have a very awesome guest. I actually came across her work when I was just nutrition coaching, and it, for me, like, I was like, this book, Real Food for Pregnancy, is actually not just for pregnancy. It was so logical, guys. Reading it, I was able to follow the logic, the train of thought. And then what I loved the most about it was that when you had a different opinion or an alternative opinion, it wasn't just a thought or a feeling you had. Like you actually went to great lengths to have like all your citations. And I felt like your citations were chapter citations. Like that's how many citations. So like it wasn't just one study that you read and then you picked and then you developed this whole concept over. It was like, no, here's like multiple. I'm talking about like 10, 15, you know what I mean? Just even looking at your citations for each chapter was just like, okay, this isn't just something that came up in the research one time. And so that's how I came across you. And I've been using that book ever since. I'm just, you know, like even for our clients now. So when you came out with a book, Real Food for Fertility, I was like, okay, I'm excited to learn more. So that's how I came across you. But let's back up. Could you just introduce yourself to anybody who possibly has not come across this book or possibly doesn't know you yet?
Yeah, sure thing. So my name's Lily Nichols. I'm a registered dietitian and diabetes educator, and my work really focuses on nutrition during the reproductive years. Of course, you're familiar with Real Food for Pregnancy. That was my second book. My first one was on gestational diabetes, and then my third book just came out in 2024, Real Food for Fertility, that I co-authored with Lisa Hendrickson-Jack, a fertility awareness educator. So yeah, my work, I tend to question the status quo on nutrition. You know, my training, official training, is as a registered dietitian. So most people, I think of dietitians as just sort of spouting out the nutrition guidelines and following kind of status quo, low fat dietary advice, cut out all the good tasting stuff essentially, and eat your fruits and vegetables and whole grains, right? Not that I'm against any of those things, but I take a much more broad and inclusive perspective to nutrition, and really kind of question the recommendations to keep, fat intake low, salt intake low, animal protein low, and so on and so forth. So what I realized in my work is that anytime you're going to question whatever is the currently accepted norm, you have to back your recommendations with a heck of a lot of data. Or at least that's how I choose to approach it, because I'm not like a keyboard warrior type person who's going to get in fights with people in comment section on social media. You know what I mean? It's like I want to lay out my argument, lay it out as clearly as possible. I mean, I choose writing as my mode of communication because I can really like think through the order in which I present information and the way in which I cover it and address all the, but what about, what about, but what about, like all in one place, right? Like, let me just lay this out as logically as possible, all cited. And I think that's what people appreciate about my work. I'm kind of like digging into, well, how did we get to this recommendation in the first place? Is there really good evidence to back the guidelines? And then, like, what has more current research uncovered? And also, just what makes logical sense from my clinical experience? You know, you can find a study to back just about anything, but especially with fertility and pregnancy outcomes, when you have, a lot of client experience under your belt, you can test out all the normal ways of approaching things, and you'll quickly see which approaches, float and which ones sink. And so I also try to bring in that aspect too.
Okay. So you touched on a few things. Reading your book, I think, so for like fertility in general, let's just open it to fertility in general. And yes, we're going to talk about pregnancy. I love that I came across that book right before I got pregnant. And how I think this relates to your new book is that I feel like when it comes to, I mean, like there's a whole rant, but we're not gonna go down of like, I feel like once a woman gets pregnant, it's like, I no longer know what's best for me. The doctor is the only one that knows what's best for me. And so to be able to have a different opinion in such a crucial time in your life where you're like, I better not be wrong. Your book really lays it out. It's like, I'm like, this isn't just a post on Instagram that I'm choosing to believe. Like, this woman has walked out the logic. has the data and the resources to prove this point. And at the end of the day, you're like, this just makes sense. Like, this is like, it just hits that like button inside of you where you're like, this makes sense. So one of the things that I remember from Real Food from Pregnancy, and then we'll dive into Real Food for Fertility, is that you talked a lot about how like, when we give women like, hey, don't eat lunch meat, don't eat this meat, don't eat this meat, don't eat this meat. I feel like either I made this up or this is a quote that like we almost get pushed to eating a lot of like simple carbs, which I'm not against, but I saw it play out when my friends would get pregnant. They were like, oh, I can't have this protein. I can't have this protein as you're like creating a child within you, like you're making really important things. And so we get pushed to like cereals and pastas. And again, there's nothing wrong with cereal and pasta. But when like you start, like you had to open my eyes up, when you start pulling back on these important protein sources, you're going to have to make it up with something. And what you make it up with does matter. You know what I mean? And there was just so much freedom where you're like, no, actually this type of fish is okay because this is present, which protects you from the, you know, mercury. Like it was just like, oh my goodness. And I personally experienced so much freedom in my pregnancy of like, look, it's fine. We're all fine. I actually know the data behind this. Your girl's going to be just fine. I'm going to keep eating my protein sources. You know what I mean? And so I just think that your work is so important because people don't want to get it wrong at such a crucial point. But then like, for the example with the salt, like you presented your salt argument so well that I was like, y'all, I'm fine. I'm having my salt. And I was fine. You know what I mean? Not saying that just because I was fine, you will be fine. But there was just so much freedom to eat more intuitively, which I feel like your body, like your book really backs up of like, hey, it's not crazy that you no longer want veggies. And by the way, have you noticed that no doctor's ever told you to reduce your veggie intake? But however, that's the one that's at the most risk of all these things that they're trying to tell you that protein's going to. You know what I mean? I think it was like Listeria or something like that. And I was just like, oh, yeah, I don't feel bad anymore that much. Because I completely just no longer wanted veggies. I was like, I can't even look at them.
Interesting.
I had such an aversion to them. And I was like, I'm not a healthy person. And when I read your book, I'm like, I'm fine. I'm fine. Like, I will return, but my body just doesn't want it right now. Okay. Yeah. So freedom was what I kind of wanted to touch on that. So when you were creating or writing, co-authoring Real Food for Fertility, what made that project different than your previous ones, considering that you, like, I guess you could say Real Food for Pregnancy is fertility. So how and why is this different?
Yeah. And I'll back up just a little bit on the section you're alluding to from Real Food for Pregnancy on foods to avoid, just to clarify for people if they didn't follow the my beef with, no pun intended, with a lot of the way we approach prenatal nutrition is from like an avoidance perspective. Like oftentimes the only information you're given from your medical team is don't eat this food because it's a food safety risk. And then nobody is considering the fallout of nutritional deficiencies if you're avoiding, well, now I can't have eggs with runny yolks. That's the only way I like eggs. Okay, I'm not eating eggs. Well, all meat is off-putting, except I've been able to eat ham. Well, lunch meat isn't safe unless I cook it until it's steaming and then it tastes terrible and throws out, like, then it makes me averse to it. Okay, I'm not eating any meat. Like, you end up in this situation where people can be potentially nutritionally deficient. And some of this comes down to like not a provider not adequately explaining the relative risks. Because when you look at the data, a lot of times the risks are really not that high for certain foods. Or if there are risks for certain foods, there could be ways to mitigate it, but still be able to have a nutritionally sufficient diet. Or like the fish conversation, there's maybe some fish you want to avoid, but there's a heck of a lot of different types of seafood that are highly beneficial.
And so much.
Yeah. So much
that you're just like, to wipe it all out. is such a disservice.
Yes, exactly. So it can get you into a place of like dietary imbalance, because essentially any fresh food is going to be a food safety risk. Like you alluded to, fruits and vegetables are actually linked to more food illness outbreaks than foodborne illness outbreaks than the undercooked meat and the undercooked eggs and the, you know, soft cheeses and all of that, all of those things that you're told to avoid. And
when
so
I
it's
read
like,
that,
yeah,
I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Nobody talks about that.
Exactly. So anyways, that's the section you're alluding to.
Yes.
And so go ahead and read that. If that's of interest, that's in chapter 4 of Real Food for Pregnancy. I don't take as strong of a stance on you have to avoid all of these things. Mm-hmm. It's more about like weighing the benefits and risks of different foods, so you don't end up living off of entirely like cereal and oatmeal and bread and pasta because everything else is unsafe, you know? And I've definitely seen that happen in practice.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. Well, because whenever you take out veggies and whenever you take out protein, there is actually only one category left. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Yeah.
There's
no,
very
and
few things left.
Yeah. No, and your book reads so well to where like you can read. Well, I highly recommend reading the whole thing, but you can go to just a chapter 4 and be like, oh, okay. Like you don't need to do start to finish to be empowered. And so I really enjoy the way that you have written that. Okay. So
Thank
clearly
you.
I love that book.
So
clearly,
I just want to clear that
clearly,
up. For...
clearly I could talk about this book all day. So I'm going to try to segue my own brain, y'all. I'm segueing my own brain. I'm forcing it over.
So to answer your second part of your question on like, what is the difference and what is the purpose of one on fertility? I mean, what's happened across the board with every book I've written is like, I feel like I write it and I'm like, well, this is a complete resource. Nothing else needs to be said, right? Like I wrote Real Food for Gestational Diabetes and people were like, well, what about general pregnancy? I'm like, it's really the same thing, you guys. It's just ignore all the like blood sugar talk, but really it, like essentially follow the same sort of thing. And then I like had my first baby and I was like, oh gosh, there's a lot of other questions I didn't address in that resource. And it really does need to be a separate book. Then, you know, after Real Food for Pregnancy, people are like, well, what about fertility? And like, you know, just apply the pregnancy part, but then like, ignore these parts because these parts are specific to pregnancy. And then read Lisa's book on tracking your menstrual cycle so you know your fertile signs and like when to time sex for conception. And then like those two books together, like you're good, right? And after a while, after Lisa and I talked for actually many years about potentially teaming up to write Real Food for Fertility, we're like, okay, this needs to be its own resource. And as we like mapped out the full outline of the book, it's like, yeah, there's going to be a little bit of overlap with the other books. It's not like I'm going to recommend like a completely different diet for fertility than what's good for
just
pregnancy.
Just kidding, guys. Just because, kidding.
Yeah. I mean, it's across the lifespan. We need real food, right? Now, the data I use to back up why it's important is of course different. And then beyond the like basics of nutrition where there's overlap, really the rest of the book is all new information. We're not talking about foods to avoid during pregnancy in the fertility book because this does not apply to this time of life. We're not talking about egg quality and sperm quality and hypothalamic amenorrhea and PCOS and recurrent miscarriage and like all these fertility issues in the pregnancy book because you're pregnant. You don't want to read about that right now. That does
That's
not
so
apply.
True.
So it actually touches on a broad range of topics that I didn't address really in any of my other books. And it also ended up being a much bigger book. I mean, it's over 500 pages and there's 2,300 plus references. So it's very heavy with the citing literature for like our recommendations in it. But ultimately it had to be, we decided, you know what, let's take this on and put out a totally separate resource. And the feedback has been overwhelmingly like, wow, thank you for putting this together. I had somebody say, I was on another podcast recently and they were like, I asked my friend who had read Real Food for Fertility what questions she had for you. And she didn't have any because you answered all of them. And I was like, music to my ears. That's what we try to do. Like answer all the questions all in one resource. It makes for a longer book, but it's complete. I could feel good about giving it to somebody and knowing they have like a solid resource to rely on and not have a bunch of follow-up questions.
Yeah, that's definitely one of those things where like, okay, and questions, and it's like, no, actually, we got it. We nailed it. We nailed it the first time.
I hope so. That's what I try to do.
Yeah. No, I hope nobody gets scared off by the amount of references, but that's how much like you don't hold back. And especially if you're going to put out a strong opinion about fertility and what this could look like, we do have to come with that many, because people are going to be like, and so many different camps with many different thoughts being like, you know, I love that, because initially I was like you, I was like, yes, just read Real Food for Pregnancy and just apply what applies. And like, we're leading into this, but absolutely. And obviously, because we focus on hypothalamic amenorrhea, and really and truly, there's such a component of it of being like, due to chronically under eating for so long. And what's so interesting is that people think that it just happens overnight. Like, no, this isn't like, you didn't touch a doorknob, you didn't catch a cold. Like, that's not how this happens. Like, this is actually like your body is being resilient in shutting off the HPO axis due to chronic under eating and over exercising, a lack of rest, and also like a mental piece. And most of the times women feel that their body is broken, like, oh my gosh, my body is broken. No, actually, given the circumstances, this is what is needed, you know, to sustain life and move forward. And your body is not ready for pregnancy. There's not enough resources. So we're going to like shut this down, right? So obviously it makes sense that for us and from our angle that HA would show up. But I loved like when I saw that you had a chapter, and obviously Lisa's in it, you know what I mean? That you guys addressed it. What was like, what led you to be like, you know what? This needs a section. Like, this is like, what were you seeing clinically? Like, was it like showing up more? Because there's a lot of registered dietitians. Like, we actually have a lot of registered dietitians as clients. We have a lot of doctors as clients, PAs as clients. And they're like, Ashley, why is this the first time I'm hearing about this? So the fact that you are talking about it is just amazing. So how did this come across? Like, how did you stumble upon this? Or why was this a passion to add it into this book?
I mean, the two major cycle issues that you see and fertility issues as a whole that you see show up are hypothalamic amenorrhea and polycystic ovarian syndrome. And they're usually kind of opposite in their clinical presentations of like the sort of client type, and also just like there's distinct metabolic differences in what's going on at the heart of the hormone disruption that's happening. We see it all the time. As a dietitian too, so many dietitians have eating disorders or disordered eating habits, and some of them are actually perpetuated by the very training that we have, which forces us to, you know, run dietary analyses on ourselves as homework assignments. And then, you know, you realize you're not complying with the dietary guidelines. You're like, oh crap, I got to pull back on my fat intake here. Oh, I've got to watch my portions here. I've got to, right? And a lot of dietitians are kind of like type A personalities, which drives the whole high cortisol and furthers the HPO axis disruption. But it's like, you see it a lot. And the point that Lisa and I wanted to make in that chapter was that HA is like the tip of the iceberg. It is like the very final stage of significant disruption to hormone production, that we can see the warning signs a lot earlier. And so this is where Lisa's part of her work of working with clients on cycle charting and monitoring, watching for those signs and symptoms. So watching for really scant and light periods, watching for a short luteal phase, watching for premenstrual spotting, which would indicate low progesterone levels, watching for delayed ovulation. There's signs before ovulation and menstruation disappear there are warning signs. And so there's, yeah, a lot of women who have full-blown HA, but there's even a greater group of women who are, we call it the HA spectrum. We went back and forth on like, what should we call it?
No, that's exactly. I'm like, look, guys, this is a spectrum. This yes. is not just like, that's exactly how we see it. 100% a spectrum. It doesn't just happen overnight. To your point, there's so many signs leading up to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of women are kind of in that limbo period for sometimes years or even their entire reproductive life. That might be hidden because they've been on hormonal contraceptives for a long time. They might have actually been put on hormonal contraceptives because their cycle was irregular or scanty, or maybe they haven't even started ovulating yet and they put them on HCs to so-called regulate the cycle, which they do no such thing. So then once they come off of them and want to get pregnant, they're like, what the heck, where's my period? And it's like, whoa, we gotta like rewind 5, 10, 20 years sometimes. This has been going on for a long time. There's deep nutrient depletion present here, and we have to address it. And then that gets into the whole can of worms of, you know, body image and body dysmorphia and this whole idea of what a healthy body looks like. It, as we go into more detail in our chapter, it goes into a lot of beliefs people have about nutrition. And I found it really interesting to, you know, we've all seen certain patterns with clients, but then to go into the literature where they have mapped out, like, what are the typical dietary practices or macronutrient balance you see in women with HA? And it's often really, really strict restriction in their fat intake in particular, and really low intake of animal protein. And sometimes they're doing this to try to be healthy because that's what the dietary guidelines tell us to do. They tell us to cut fat, cut saturated fat, cut animal foods, go plant-based. And yet that perpetuates the further you further along the spectrum of developing full-blown HA, the more you lean into that restrictive dietary pattern. And what we found a bit frustrating on the, you know, more conventional clinical management side is they'll work with you on, you know, desensitizing you to foods that you deem unhealthy. But a lot of the focus on desensitization to off-limit foods focuses on processed foods, but they don't address the fear of fat and animal protein. And yet, like, that's really where a lot of your nutrient deficiencies are arising from in the first place. So, like, I'm all for people occasionally having their French fries and milkshakes and whatever. Like, I am not a strict 100% eater, despite what people might think. Like, I eat pretty much everything. But we need to address the, like, restriction of nutrient-dense foods. Like, that also needs to happen. Like, these can both coexist. We're not going to create more eating disorders. They're going to like not feel good if you take them off of whatever restriction they're doing and then you force feed them a ton of processed foods. That's like the quickest way to get somebody back in. Like, this is why people yo-yo in and out of eating disorder treatment, is they never get the deep nourishment and you're on this crazy blood sugar roller coaster. You're super bloated. You're inflamed. You feel honestly bad in your body because, yeah, you got calories, but you didn't get nourishment, you know? So
you are like speaking straight to my heart. Like, I'm having so many like ping, ping, ping.
Yeah, right.
So I think because Danny and I had already known of your work and we were had it like already like, you're like, yes, you know what I mean? Like, you know, like I came from my very like macro counting. So all things fit, whatever, you know what I mean? And Danny was more. Yeah. I mean, she also did some macro counting, but like, I think both of us really do value like whole foods, real foods. So that's always, you know what I mean? And then whenever both of us got a hold of your book and they were like, it 100% molds the way that we coach because when people come to us, they already know, look here, we're going to be talking about grass-fed butter, a potato, and you're going to need some animal protein. And it's like, we're not going to hold that back from people. Like, oh, we're going to like, you have to like pay us to hear that you need a a potato, but a lot of the times, you know what I mean? You know, a lot of the times it's to your point. I've never really had to, I've maybe had maybe like four that I really had to work with people on like fear foods of like dessert foods. Like we'll just call it like dessert foods or treat foods. Like 99% of our work is desensitizing people to potatoes, desensitizing people to like butter, desensitizing people to like beef again, desensitizing people to chicken thighs with the skin on the bone, like desensitizing people to salmon and not the fat-free salmon. You know what I mean? Desensitizing people to like, you know, salt. Like the majority of my day is getting people to be like, you know, if you have a potato with butter and salt, first off, you're going to get the carbs. You're going to get the, you know, like the slow digestion carbs. You're going to get the fat from the butter. You're going to get everything that you need. You know what I mean? Like the potassium and the salt and the sodium. Like this is actually really healing. And when people are getting healing HA off of like bringing back in those fattier cuts of meat that they've avoided for years, and it's showing up in their HTMAs, like their hair mineral analysis, you know what I mean? Like they are just completely tanked.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? From eating so healthy for so long, but you are mineral deficient, vitamin and mineral deficient. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
It's really most of our work is bringing them back to these, to your point. It's not sitting here being like trying to convince you that a donut's okay. It's trying to convince you that like you can have a potato and you're not going to get type 2 diabetes.
You can have a potato and steak and not cut all the fat off the steak. I mean, I had a rant recently in my stories on Instagram. I made a beef stew with potatoes and sweet potatoes in it.
And carrots.
Yeah, right. And like some onion and some, you know, herbs and whatever, bone broth, right? But I'm like, this whole concept, cultural construct around meat and potatoes being synonymous with being unhealthy is like the worst lie waged against us. Like, is there no original, like most nourishing food than like root vegetables and meat? Thank you. Like,
thank you. Like that's honestly, you know, I was just on a discovery call and I could tell that she was really close. I was like, girl, like, I'm not going to try to sell you on a service that you don't need. What I really think you, I kid you not. I said this. I said, I honestly think that if you start eating some potatoes with butter and have a steak, you're going to get there on your own. Like, I know that you'll be there. Like that's what she looked at me like I was crazy. I was like, no, but for real, like, no, like you don't need,
but a that's where supplement. People need, that's where people need the counseling. This is where, when we were working on the different chapters of the book, right, we almost had HA and PCOS combined in one chapter. Mm-hmm. And then we're like, whoa, this is like, we're speaking to different client types here. And Lisa and I both know that we're like, these need to be separate chapters. And our HA chapter has a ton of like, no, let's bring you back to the point you have to eat enough. Let's bring you back to the point mm-hmm. you have to eat enough. Let's bring you back to the point you got to actually eat the food. Like you have to eat the food, eat the food, right? Yeah. But it you takes can't a lot optimize. Of
100%. And especially with the clientele of HA, we're so busy trying to optimize everything, optimize training, optimize eating. And I'm like, yes, I'm all for that, but you have to do step one,
yeah,
which is actually eating enough.
Yeah,
then you can optimize. Mm-hmm. You have HA because you didn't do step one, and you're trying to optimize and biohack everything.
Yes, you they're trying to bypass eating enough food by mm-hmm. any means possible. Yes,
yeah, you know, yes. And I really, it's so interesting on how the body responds whenever you've been so fat depleted, like nutrients fat depleted. I mean, obviously body fat is too, you know what I mean? So, but the thing of like, if you stop picking apart food and have eggs as a whole egg and steak as like a whole steak, butter as like butter that hasn't been, you know, like reduced or it's margin or it's like, I can't believe it's not butter or, you know what I mean? Or to the point where
you're just spraying olive oil from like an aerosol can.
Oh yeah, screw the aerosol sprayed fats. No.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Pour it on, please.
You know what I mean? Like your body, like what people don't realize is that at the basic foundations of hormones is cholesterol. You know what I mean? Is like you need that to make hormones. And now we're wondering why our hormones are completely tanked and you've been living a fat-free life. You know what I mean? And now there's occasionally a few that have that, you know, like I have seen, I've had probably, but it's very little. Well, they'll come more on the carnivore or like the keto and they just really miss carbs in general. And for them, it's not bringing back in bread. It's bringing back in the potato.
Totally. Yeah. And that's kind of the important point for clinicians. And that's one of the points I have a webinar all about hypothalamic amenorrhea for healthcare practitioners. And a big part of the focus on that is identifying as the practitioner, where is the restriction coming from? Yes. Because it can be, we've been talking all about fat. The restriction can be from any of the three macronutrients or all three combined. And it's fairly balanced intake, just super low caloric intake as a whole. It can be any of them. So yeah, we have also seen with low carb eaters, especially the ones who are doing it specifically to try to cut fat for a bikini competition or some sort of sport, because you do drop water weight fairly quickly when you cut carbs. That's why people do it. The thing that people don't realize about cutting carbs, though, is that your metabolism speeds up a little bit. You actually burn more calories. So if you're eating low carb, you need to make up the difference even more so with eating enough protein and fat. And then when you combine that with somebody who's already afraid of eating protein and fat, you just like low carb becomes an excuse for under eating. But what's really interesting when you dive into like the, you know, how our bodies burn fuels, there's a ton of research on male athletes. There's less research on female athletes, but in female athletes, yes, they need carbs. Athletes need more carbs than non-athletes, of course, but women in particular burn fat more readily than male athletes. So if they're not eating enough fat and they already have low body fat reserves, which you often see with HA, we run into a problem where there's just not enough of that fuel available for them. And then there's not enough of that fuel left over for hormone production. And we actually have studies where you restrict fat intake among women and you see their estrogen levels drop anywhere from 20 to 30%. And you see their progesterone levels drop anywhere from like 35 to 50%. So guess what's going to happen to your, like, that is telling you that low fat is really a signal to your body to shut down the HPO access. It doesn't have enough resources to fuel hormone production. So it kind of like, it all needs to be addressed. And not to mention, they need higher protein. And to your point about leaving the foods whole, if people actually eat a sufficient amount of protein, which by the way, is more than twice as much what our current dietary guidelines tell us. And even people more think than we're that crazy. For athletes.
Yeah. Oh, they're like, totally. Oh my gosh, they're so crazy. They talk about eating animal protein. I'm just like, or like they're so focused on protein. And I'm like, compared to what?
Yeah. So if they're hitting the protein goals and they're not obsessively taking the fat out of all of your protein rich foods, the yolk stays in the egg, the fat stays in the milk and yogurt and cheese and butter and cream and cottage cheese. The fat stays on your steak. You eat the skin on your chicken and turkey, like all the fats, you're eating all the fats. If you're just getting enough protein, you're then also getting enough fat. You know, like it becomes so much easier when we stop
so much easier
picking everything apart.
Yes, it's so much easier that you know, like I think like because people come from either a micromanaging or a purposely dieting background, they're like, how am I going to do it all? And I remember being there. So y'all, I'm talking to myself, my past self. Your past self was crazy. I was a lunatic, you know what I mean? But to your point of like, you actually don't have to micromanage your fat intake if you're getting enough, if you just leave your protein alone.
Yep.
If you just leave food alone, And this isn't a please go off high and to the right on an orthorexia kick, because people will hear this and be like, so I have to be perfect and it's whole foods only. Ironically, right, when those clients come to us and they say whole foods only, they're eating 2 to 3 salads per day, trying to think that that's going to be enough. And it's clearly not, because their cycle is missing. You know what I mean?
Right.
But there, it's eating in this certain way, which is beneficial to fertility. And you have those 2,300 studies to back it up. It does lean more into intuitive eating.
100%.
You know, like, because we're not sitting here trying to micromanage every micronutrient or macronutrient. You know what I mean? We're not sitting here. Nobody is going to overeat potatoes. I mean, I love potatoes. Clearly, I talk about it, you know what I mean? But no one's sitting here like, no, you're going to feel full and you're going to be fine. And you're going to be like, oh, okay. You know what I mean? No one's sitting here being like, and then I lost my mind on potatoes. No, and like, you just don't see that with like protein sources. You don't see that, you know. So I think it's just interesting that micromanaging is like a byproduct of how we've picked apart our food and how far we've gotten away, you know what I mean, from eating in a way that supports fertility and eating in a way that supports, you know, pregnancy, that type of thing.
Y'all, we have been trying to record this for like 30 minutes. So here we go. Take 580. Hey, did you know that we support people with HA, low progesterone, anovulation, short luteal phases, and all of the types of challenges that come up with infertility?
Danny and I are practitioners that have helped hundreds of women beat HA, regain fertility, and get pregnant naturally.
Mm-hmm. We are here to break the status quo of spending tens of thousands of dollars on IVF treatments for women who have issues that can absolutely be solved naturally.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes. So we do this with our signature program that restores ovulation to regain healthy menstrual cycles. And if you're ready, get pregnant completely naturally.
Mm-hmm. On top of our one-on-one sessions, our fertility program even includes a styling session with Samantha Dawn, who is a body positive stylist. She's also our personal stylist.
Yes.
And an expert in helping you to dress your new and nourished body.
This is so important that we don't even need to convince you on how important this is. We want you to relearn how to nourish your body, claim your fertility, and feel confident in your clothes as your body changes. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be painful.
No, yeah, exactly right. It doesn't have to be painful. With a little bit of guidance and support, you can absolutely do this. So if getting your cycle back and if feeling good about the process, if getting pregnant naturally is something you want to do, if you don't want to spend tens of thousands of dollars on medical treatment for something that you don't have to, we have just the place for you to go. So go to thehasociety.com/coaching to learn more about who we are, what we do, and apply today.
Yeah, we looked forward to supporting you.
That was good. Do you like that one?
Yeah, okay. I do like that one. That one's way more us.
Yeah, boom, there you go.
I think people can feel kind of out of control with their food when, especially when they're not getting enough protein and fat,
you or just
burn through your meal or your snack so quickly that you're on a blood sugar roller coaster where you feel famished, like you'll feel overstuffed for a short period of time and then immediately famished because there wasn't like, you just burned through it so fast. You know, this is why macronutrient balance has to be some part of the equation. And I see this mostly, I used to kind of pick apart the carbs a little more, especially with my background with diabetes mm-hmm. management, right? And this has shifted over the years to focusing on helping people get adequate protein and fat without eliminating the carbs. Yeah, we talk about quality carbs and whatever. Yeah. But like, if you're getting enough, then you won't be as famished. And this also can happen when the people who have no business going keto are going keto and they don't allow any carbs. They also it's hard to experience full satiety, because the protein, it sounds counterintuitive, but protein is so filling that you sometimes finish your meal full, but you didn't get enough calories.
Yes. That makes sense. Every woman who's going through HA recovery is I know that feeling.
Yes.
And you know what? They will experience that and they will say, see, my hunger cues are so jacked up. I can't listen to my body. That's proof. That experience that you just said is proof. Yeah. I can't trust my body and I must micromanage. And I'm like, or did you leave out a macronutrient? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yes, you are physically full, but that part of your brainstem that's I didn't get enough calories, I'm still hungry. And so now you have these two messages combining. And then because diet culture is what it is, we sit here and be like, my body can't be trusted. I must micromanage it.
Yeah.
I must do it. You know what I
mean? Instead of looking at the signals your body is sending you as information, which it is. I mean, I can trigger that sensation in my system really for the whole day. If I do a breakfast that's all carbs, I can have that emergency system going off, being mm-hmm. Oh man, I need more food. Oh man, I need more. I'm just famished the entire day because I didn't hit the protein and fat intake at breakfast. And again, like I said, I'm not 100% always doing all the things every mm-hmm. single day, right? And so I do that occasionally. And then I'm reminded as those alarm bells are going out, you need more food, you need more food. Oh, right. What did I have for breakfast today? Oh yeah, maybe that's probably why. And I go and get myself a balanced meal with enough protein, enough fat, enough carbs. And you have to kind of restart the cycle, reset. So
important. I have had two clients. One, she came to me with type 2, her blood sugar was 270, right? And it was because she had tried to recover her missing period by, she was listening to some other sources and really went off on the processed foods and wound up finding herself with a blood sugar of 270. Right. And the biggest, to your point, I didn't sit here and remove carbs. I sat here and I added protein and fat.
Yeah.
Will naturally reduce carbs in general, but really focusing, on she is Hispanic and just bringing back it's okay to have beans. Beans are not the reason why, you know what I mean? But we need some eggs with those beans, you know what I mean? And just bringing that back in. And then I even had one client with type 1 and she was so afraid of eating carbs that she wound up only eating carbs. And didn't, and again, that balance, bringing that balance back in, and she had a period, you know what I mean? So it was just interesting to see, to your point, that before we talk about the discussion of removing carbs, let's just make sure that the foundation is there first and see how the body responds and then make tweaks once everything is actually in there first. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I have loved this conversation. You mentioned that you have a webinar for practitioners. Tell the people about that. I think that you had alluded hey, a lot of RDs through training also are some, not all, let's be real, are also struggling with their own relationship with food, and then it is passing it on, and which is multiplying plus diet culture. So no wonder why women are confused. And so I love your heart to be like, hey, practitioners, let's talk. Tell me more about this.
Yeah. So I co-run the Women's Health Nutrition Academy, which is a online resource for webinars and courses for health practitioners, with another dietitian, Ayla Varmer. And we put out these pretty detailed 90-minute, they often go to 2 hours, webinars that go in depth on different women's health nutrition topics. So we kind of run the gamut with our content, from fertility, pregnancy, postpartum, breastfeeding, all the way to menopause, and touching on everything. So one webinar we hadn't addressed was hypothalamic amenorrhea. We had one on fueling female athletes from a PhD sports nutritionist, but I had a lot of practitioners who wanted more specifics on how to manage this clinically. So you know, there's a pretty detailed chapter in Real Food for Fertility on HA already, and that's also helpful for practitioners. But in a webinar kind of format, I can dig deeper into the things like calculating energy needs. Like, how are you actually determining how many calories people need? A lot of people don't realize, like, there's an array of different calculation options. Some of them might rely on things like fat-free mass, which you can only get with certain more expensive tests that are available. So, like, what are your best options given the limitations that we're not running a metabolic lab here, yeah, where you can have access to indirect calorimetry, right? We talk more specifically on protein requirements and like when those need to be ramped up and why. We talk more specifically about all the different areas of health that can be impacted by longstanding HA beyond what we covered in the HA chapter. Sometimes for resources that are going out to the general public, we don't want to go too scary and like make it all doom and gloom. And sometimes with the practitioners, we have to, because as a practitioner, sometimes you're the best one suited to determine when to go into those kind of topics. And then we go into also more information on, like, you know, screening for and referring out clients who might have eating disorders. Again, yes, that's kind of a beyond the scope of a book to go into that. I don't know how to troubleshoot some of the longstanding cases. Lab tests, that's something that we don't go into in Real Food for Fertility, mm-hmm, is the specific lab tests that you'd want to look at and when with a client who's presenting with HA or is on the HA spectrum. So it's really things that like the clinician can use to better determine, you know, what to do with the particular client, how to assess their eating, how to best counsel them, some of the kinds of questions you'd want to ask them. So that is available at whnacademy.com if anybody is interested. We don't like restrict access to only practitioners. I just let you know that it's intended for a practitioner audience, so the conversation's a bit more high level naturally.
Yeah, and thankfully women who've had HA, they have searched and read and are well, like, they are generally come to us really well, like, researched, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
So that's what I love about our clients. Like, our clients are brilliant. They're like brilliant women, high achieving, like, women. So I bet you that they will love that. And we'll have that in like the show notes, because I know that they're going to eat that up. I love that. And yes, to your point of, like, you know, testing labs, it's so important. Like, I just had a client, she came to me and she was like, everyone's told me that this is PCOS, but I know it's not PCOS. And I only have this one set of labs. And so going through her history, I was like, do you, you know, because she was tracking with like Anito as well too, so she was able to track her LH surge, and you know, when there's a follicular wave that doesn't complete into ovulation. So she was having these labs that were slightly outside of the norm, that was like presenting as PCOS, but nothing about the actual client was, mm-hmm, right? So you had to stop, yeah, and be like, okay, I know that this is what her labs are looking like, but this is this person in front of me and it's not matching up. And that doesn't mean that one of these two are wrong, but what am I missing? And sure enough, all these, like, you know, like the testosterone, you know, all this was just peaking. That was her other clinicians were telling her that she had PCOS. I was like, can we go back, yeah, to this? Like, what was your LH surge on that day? And what was your estrogen? And sure enough, it was a follicular wave.
Yeah.
No, she didn't have PCOS. No, her body was just trying to ovulate. And so, to, right, your point, knowing, like, being able to see labs of somebody healing rather, mm-hmm, than, and then trying to compare that to a normal perfect cycle are two different things. Like, mm-hmm, your body is trying to heal, and that's going to look, quote unquote, more messy, and isn't going to be able to be filed into a certain category. Right. And really have to take where you're at in your journey and what's going on, because unlike men, like, we ebb and flow, you know what I mean? And it's not like flatline.
Yeah. And we talk about that in the webinar too, like how to differentiate HA from PCOS, because they really are very different clinical profiles. It's kind of shocking to me that like.
So shocking.
No, it's like diagnosed so often.
No. I'm so glad that you're saying that, because I've been saying this for years where I'm like, so either I'm missing a really big piece, or the truth is that these present so differently that there's like, I don't understand how we're getting misdiagnosed.
Yeah. They'll misdiagnose it as lean PCOS, yes. And it's not lean PCOS. If they don't understand the menstrual cycle and cycle charting and all the ways that you can like verify what's happening at different stages of the mm-hmm. cycle. And you could do this, by the way, with fertility awareness based yeah. methods that Lisa teaches. You could also follow up with, you know, more diligent like hormone testing to verify, but you see the indication of what's happening, like where's their basal body temperature, or sometimes they'll miss the HA but they diagnose them hypothyroid, and it's like, well, yes, they are hypothyroid, and they are hypothyroid
as a result
of not having enough energy. So their thyroid is downregulating their metabolism to preserve resources so their body can survive. And the first place you preserve resources and pull back from is your reproductive hormones. It doesn't want to waste the resources. If you cannot sustain a pregnancy, ovulation's off the table. You know, I don't, it's very like, logical, obvious stuff.
Well, and then to think, what are we doing by just giving them thyroid meds to force a metabolism to speed up when it has intentionally downregulated? So now your body is like, I need to do this, but then we're going to manhandle and micromanage and tell you to speed up because
we're going to make your metabolism speed up and burn more calories, but you're not eating more calories. It's a nightmare. They've got to address the under eating. I even think the under eating needs to be addressed before they put people on thyroid hormone replacement, but you know, rant.
Girl, clearly you and I can rant all day. So I'm going to eventually have to land this plane, and we're going to land it here because that's so good. Because if I go even further on that, but yes. Clearly, everybody, we encourage you to check out this resource. Absolutely. We're pumped about it. We're just pumped that more people are talking about it, because there's so many women in the world that like, this just needs to be a basic thing that people are aware of. And so we really appreciate you coming on here, sharing your time, creating this resources, creating this book. Seriously. It's worth getting both of them. I'm not letting go of Real Food for Pregnancy.
But I tell people, you know, I get a surprising number of questions from people on like, well, which of your books should I get? And my first question is, are you pregnant? And if the answer is yes, I say, well, get Real Food for Pregnancy. Then if you develop gestational diabetes, you could get the gestational diabetes book, but that's like optional. Pregnant? Okay, get Real Food for Fertility. And guess what? Even if you are done having babies, I still recommend people get Real Food for Fertility, because fertility is simply a reflection of optimal health. And as we get into our later years, perimenopause and whatnot, we want to maintain our natural hormone production as long as we can, so we have a more easeful transition into menopause. You have a lot of women that think they're in early menopause and it's just HA, by the way. That's a rant for another
girl,
day.
Don't get me started, because that is my, I have another one. I have so many awesome women who are in their 40s that are pushing back. They're like, this isn't menopause, and they are regaining their cycle and they're ovulating, and it's strong ovulation. Like even women who like failed IVF, like in their 20s and 30s, I have a slew of older, quote unquote, older, I don't know, women who are like pushing back. And I'm like, freak. Yes. Like like, you know, like those are your last 10 years to ovulate. Do it.
Let's keep your hormone production good, so your bones stay stronger, your heart and cardiovascular system is in better shape. I mean, all the things, your mental health is better.
I mean, who want, like, no, Yes, we're at the end of this conversation because I could go on a whole other rant. Because like we have women who are 30 who have broken hips.
30. Wow.
30. Yeah. Where is like 30?
I'm going to add another, just one more little rant.
Go ahead, girl. I can't tell you no.
Okay. So our bone health, people always think about bones and they think all we need to do is calcium and vitamin D.
Yes, girl, go.
The HA treatment is just calcium and vitamin D and then sufficient calories. Yes, sufficient calories are a good thing. But if you want your bones to be strong, you actually need to eat enough protein, because protein, sufficient protein, gives your body the signal of something called IGF-1 that helps you build bone. It also happens to have a whole bunch of micronutrients that help you build bone, like taurine and glycine and all these other things. Vitamin B12, another one. But if we don't address the underconsumption of protein, we're not going to help people build their bone mass. And when you're 30 and you already have osteoporosis, like, this is a time to intervene immediately, because you are in that window, like the window of time of building peak bone mass is about to close. And we've got to keep your bones as strong as we can, because this is what I also see. I see women in their 50s, 40s and 50s with full-blown osteoporosis. Yeah. And it is coming off of 1990s diet culture, low fat dieting, low animal protein for decades. And now they're paying the price. We're going to see it get a lot worse in the next 10 years after this whole wave of veganism. Anyways, that's a rant for another day, but.
Yeah. Well, and then think about how like thyroid is and T3 is actually tied into bones. And so is leptin. And again, when your body's downregulated that, and then like your doctor's jacked it up, and like, where do you think they're going? Like, the reason why it's pulling, you know, yes.
We could go on and on.
Well, yeah. And then think about, for our clientele, they are the ones that have been doing, our clients are 100% the ones that have been doing the calcium, vitamin D, and going to the gym every day. And my pushback to that is, how is it working for you?
You're not building lean body mass and bone density if they're not eating enough protein. It's not working.
That too. And actually weighing more is more weight bearing than your 1 to 2 hours at the gym, because you spend those 22 other hours in your body. And so you trying to be the leanest version of yourself, doing all the things that we just, like, it's like a starter pack for osteoporosis, osteopenia in like your 40s, 50s. It's a starter pack. Okay, girl.
I gotta we'll shut this down.
I know. I have to be the adult. And I have to shut this down. Guys, go follow her. Get the books. Do the webinar. I mean, eat up all these resources, because it's no longer an excuse that we don't know anymore. The time has come. Like, we know now. So thank you, Lily. You've been a joy.
Thank you.
All right. Bye, peoples.
Hey there, it's me, Danny, and I want to tell you about TempDrop as a fertility awareness method tracking option. So many of you guys know that we actually recommend the fertility awareness method both as you're going through recovery and 100% after you have gotten some cycles back and you're starting to move forward for the rest of your reproductive years. So TempDrop itself is a wearable fertility monitor, and we love it. It's a wearable device, so you put it around your arm and you can use that instead of taking your temperature manually with a thermometer each morning. So I'm personally a big fan of the manual tracking. All of us at the HA Society are, and that's the method that we use, you know, just using a good old thermometer. We use that with our clients because it's the best way to use it as a diagnostic tool, as a practitioner. And it's also the best way to ensure, if you're trying to avoid pregnancy, that you don't get pregnant. However, manual temping, for many reasons, is just not always an option. When you're in the middle of recovery, again, we do recommend manual temping, but once you're cycling, the temp drop is actually a really great hack. So it gives you basically everything you need to effortlessly track your fertility status, like where you are in your monthly cycle. So you wear the temp drop sensor while you're sleeping for accurate basal body temperature readings without the stress of early morning wake-ups. So I personally love this because with a toddler, my wake-up times are all over the place and the occasional sleep disruptions make using an oral thermometer a lot more difficult. So TempDrop's accompanying charting app enables you to track an array of symptoms alongside your basal body temperature. This includes tracking your cervical mucus if you've been using OPKs, and then it also gives you sleep insights too. So you can combine these fertility signs all in one place, and that will help you identify your fertile window, confirm ovulation, plan for your period, and if you're trying to get pregnant, you know, identify whether or not you are pregnant. So whether you're trying to conceive or avoiding pregnancy, or you want to chart for health reasons like HA recovery, making sure your cycle is not slipping back in the HA direction, TempDrop makes fertility awareness accessible to all women, even if you don't have regular cycles or sleeping patterns. So track your ovulation in real time with the TempDrop. And we are lucky enough to have a 15% off code. So if you go to their website, they're usually having a sale, but you can stack this code on top of the existing code. So just go to tempdrop.thehasociety.com and use the code AFHASociety. I think too, if you just go to tempdrop.com and use AFHASociety at the checkout, that will work too. So happy temping and good luck.
This episode is brought to you by Grassland Nutrition Beef Liver Capsules. Did you know that in terms of nutrient density, beef liver actually blows vegetables and fruits out of the water? If you're a client of mine, you have already been instructed to eat beef liver either fresh or in capsule form. I recommend it for anyone and everyone who is, of course, dealing with amenorrhea and fertility challenges out there, but I may even recommend it for just everyone in general. Get your husbands on it, get your partners on it. If you have a history of HA and add on top of that maybe a history of the pill, maybe you've been pregnant before, you know, through treatments or other, like you've just, your body's been through anything, you know, you're absolutely 100% dealing with a nutrient deficiency of some kind. And while it's true that testing is going to be the best way to understand those exact deficiencies, eating nutrient-dense, real food is going to be one of the most important next steps that you take with or without testing. So I've been using and recommending Grassland Nutrition Beef Liver Capsules for years now. And the capsule form makes it so easy to get your liver in every day. And I appreciate the transparency of this product in particular above others. So in case you're wondering, it's completely natural. This is freeze-dried beef liver in capsules. It's organic. It's made from Australian beef. And my favorite of their products is the liver with kelp because of the iodine from the kelp, which is important for overall thyroid function, which is often low in women with underperforming hormones. So rather than eat seaweed snacks every day, I get to take this beef liver with the kelp for my iodine. So if you're recovering or working on a fertility journey right now, do not skimp the nutrient rich source of beef liver. Get 10% off your order with the HA Society and support your favorite podcast along the way. They ship to most countries, so you should be covered. Just go to grasslandnutrition.net and use HA Society, just HA Society, at the checkout for the 10% off. That's grasslandnutrition.net with the code HA Society.
Thank you so much for listening today, guys. Please subscribe to the podcast, and if you could head to iTunes specifically and leave a rating or review, that would help so much because it makes it easier for other people with HA who are Googling around to find the podcast really easily. So if you do that, you're doing a service to all of the women.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.